Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have a very, very accomplished young lady who's a doctor. Dr. Jaya, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me here. It's a pleasure to be here.
So Dr. Jaya is an MBBS from the Kasturba Gandhi Medical College, Manipal. She has a specialization in dermatology from Gujarat and she's a hair transplant surgeon. That's quite an accomplishment. Jaya, tell me a little bit about your early career.
So, instead of just starting about the early career, I would say I'd rather talk about when I decided to become a doctor. So I was pretty young, maybe in class 6th, 7th, and everybody used to say, if you're going to become a doctor, it's going to be, you're going to be very old by the time you're doing something for yourself. And I read somewhere that, you know, if you don't give up on a dream just because it's going to take time, because time is going to pass anyway. So that was the thing which stuck with me. And practically, if you go into a medical line, you're spending about 5.5 years on your MBBS, then another about 3 to 4 years on your specialization. So you're basically spending another 12 years beside your class 1 to 12 in doing this education.
And they say that for doctors are studying all their lives.
Yeah, and but that is like core studying when you're spending even 24 to 48 hours just in hospital straight.
That's true.
So yes, that's the part of the struggle, which is actually difficult. Once you get your degrees, it definitely starts getting easier. It starts getting better. So initially, so everything happened with me by chance. Dermatology was not really my first preference. But somehow circumstances were such that I landed up with dermatology. And I was very skeptical that I'm going to be able to spend my entire life with this. And then the more years I spent with it, more, you know, the more I started loving it. In fact, somehow I'm one of those people who can pretty much say that, you know, I would not say I went ahead and made this for myself. I came back to Delhi after finishing my MD and I was looking for a job. And the job that I got was with a hair transplant clinic. And nowhere in 3 years of my specialization was I ever thinking, oh, I'm going to become a hair transplant surgeon. And that's the job I got. And then I got these wonderful teachers who taught me over there. And one thing to the next, I thought I was just very lucky to land there. So for me, it's been a very good journey and a very beautiful journey.
So let's talk a little bit about dermatology first, and then we'll talk of hair transplant. And the first question that comes to my mind is on skin whitening. Why is there such a craze for this in our country?
So this is something which I have really thought, and I have not just thought when I became a dermatologist, I have even thought before when I was a child. I think it really stems from the fact that, you know, our grandfathers and our great-grandfathers, when they lived, we were colonized for a very long time, and we looked up onto the Caucasian skin. So I think it's a very deep-rooted thing. So when, like, when I was born, so I am like half Gupta, and my mom's side was Sindhi. So Sindhi and Punjabi people, they have more white skin. And I think it's just, you know, because they had seen those Caucasian people. So the first benchmark of anybody being beautiful would be, oh, how fair is the girl? And I think I don't blame my grandparents because they grew up in that environment. And then our parents kind of emulated it because they heard it since they were kids. And then somehow we also heard it. But I think we are all educated enough to know that that's not the case anymore. Like if you, even if you see the World Congress of Dermatology, their entire symbol is like the six types of skin. They have that in a form of a lotus. So they say every skin type is beautiful. So no, we don't promote skin whitening.
So before I go further, tell me what are the six types of skin?
It's not six types of skin. It's like the six colors.
So what are these colors?
No, we don't really say that. You know, it just starts from Caucasian to you know, so that way. But basically, we believe in healthy skin.
I agree.
We believe that, you know, it's the largest organ of the body and it's protecting everything inside it. So I definitely promote skin health, but I don't promote, you cannot, you know, you should be happy. In fact, for our climate, we have the perfect skin color.
I agree. Because, you know, we have to be comfortable with whatever skin we have.
we have beautiful skin.
Absolutely.
We have beautiful skin. There's nothing to feel
and
bad.
Yet I was reading, it's I think a $2.5 or $3 billion industry.
It's just because, you know, I think educated people should start making sure that in front of their children, they're not making these comparisons.
I agree.
In fact, my brother is in US and he dates like an American girl. Mm. And then over there, they feel it's like, you know, they're very pale.
Yeah.
They don't have
that's
the color.
True.
So, you know, everybody, it's just what you feel from inside.
That's what, in fact, I tell a lot of my American friends that,
yeah.
you know, you come to India and you want a tan.
Yeah.
And we sit in our car in the middle of summer and we get a natural tan.
Yeah. No, it's just
okay.
You should be healthy.
Okay. So, yeah, let me move on. You know, in a tropical country like ours, what are some of the common skin-related challenges we face?
So mostly you would say that, you know, we do have fungal infections. Mm. And then there are things like, you know, urticaria, that's allergies and eczema. And, you know, as we grow older, there's another dermatitis.
Correct.
These are more common.
Correct.
In children, there are acne,
yeah.
dandruff,
yeah.
psoriasis.
Mm.
There are certain rare conditions which you probably, it's like pemphigus and all,
sure,
which are not
sure.
very common.
Yeah.
But they do exist.
Yeah. And for the common human being and all the people who will be watching us, thousands of people
yeah.
will watch us or listen to us. The best way to look after your skin is to keep it clean and washed.
Of course. But also, yes, there are a few things that we need to realize
mm-hmm.
So it's a basic cover,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like how if you have a good camera.
Yeah.
And you're keeping it covered. Mm-hmm. Similarly, our body, the skin is our basic cover. So there are certain few pointers like using a sunscreen and, you know, using an
mm-hmm.
having an antioxidant. These are very basic few things.
Mm-hmm.
Having a normal skincare routine is kind of important. And that's pretty much enough. If you're doing that since the right age,
correct.
You'll be good to go.
Correct. Correct. So, you know, when I was reading about you and I was reading about dermatology, there were some interesting statistics
okay.
which said that there are, in a country of 1.3 billion people,
mm-hmm.
There are barely 6,000 dermatologists
yeah.
who, and 90% of them are in urban India.
Yes.
And yet, as you said just now, it is the biggest organ of our body.
Yeah.
Why is there such a big dissonance?
So a lot of initially, I think, let's say about 20 years ago, there were not too many dermatology seats, you know, there were not too many dermatology graduates
okay.
and a general physician would be practicing most of it.
Mm.
But yes, there is a huge lag. That's something which I had also realized while I was in a government college in Ahmedabad.
Mm-hmm.
We used to get people from all across the state and even from Rajasthan and all who had these rare disorders and they were never diagnosed properly.
Mm-hmm.
So ever since 3 years that I have been, I try to go to some of the villages like any of the help. They have come from a village in Punjab or Haryana or Uttar Pradesh. So I have villages, but I have, you know, visited about 10 to 12 villages.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, at least, you know, you'll find that one person who's not been diagnosed properly, who has a pemphigus.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have as much resources to
mm-hmm.
get them to
mm-hmm.
Delhi and treat them myself right now. But I do write them and I do tell them that, you know, you would be requiring this kind of treatment and you need to go to a tertiary care center. So basically, that's a 10-year goal
yeah.
that I hope to be able to have like a 1-year entire, you know, campaign, just like take an RV
wow.
and go across India. And see as many patients as possible, at least to diagnose them that and tell them that this is the care that you need.
That's quite amazing. And I hope through our show you'll find many people who
yeah, that was one
willing
of the major
to support
reasons.
You. And you know,
I would really
you
love
can count
that.
On my support as well if you're going to do something
yeah.
like this. So one or two more questions on skin before we move on. My question to you is that, you know, in a country like ours, which has got so many seasons, certainly in North India,
mm-hmm.
are skin disorders seasonal?
Yes.
And can we eat right for better
yes.
skin?
For the first part, yes, a lot of them are seasonal. Very simply put, something like dandruff, dryness,
mm-hmm.
They are even allergies, they would come with pollen more. Fungal infections would come with humidity more. So yes, of course, a lot of skin conditions are seasonal. And as far as eating is concerned, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Eating right, just not for skin, but for your health,
mm-hmm.
on and whole, is a very important thing.
That's true.
Nothing beats if you're eating right, if you're good habits, if you have healthy habits, if you're exercising and eating right, mm-hmm. I think it takes care of your health about at least, you know, I would say 50-60% of your job is done. Mm-hmm. In fact, I for one really do believe that when we're talking about harming the environment or, you know, the global changes mm-hmm. and stuff, I also think if you're overeating, you are stressing the earth.
Correct.
You need to just eat just the right amount and not extra.
Correct.
Or not even less. Correct. You should be healthy.
Correct. So quick question on eating right. I know it's a totally different
problem.
Subject
yeah.
and,
no, I
and
believe
it's a
in
huge
these,
subject.
Yeah.
But what would be some of the foods that one should avoid for our skin?
Definitely all kinds of junk foods. I say there's something called high glycemic index food. So that goes for all kinds of, just not skin, but diabetes and all also, but also hormonal disorders. So skin is something, there are a few conditions which are only skin related, but a lot of it is that, you know, if you have something inside, it would, the first symptoms would manifest on skin.
Okay.
So it's all very interrelated. A good dermatologist is able to diagnose inner problem much earlier. So that's the basic thing. So definitely if you're eating right, that helps. And yeah, good fruit, you know, if you're having fruits and all, that's a very good thing.
Yeah. So my last question to you on skin, and this relates to millennials and their skin.
Yeah,
I'm much older than you, and I have seen, you know, how much you know, whitening was a big challenge when I was growing up, etc. And yet I find millennials are going to change the future of this country.
Mm-hmm.
They're far more comfortable.
Yes.
How? What is your view on millennials and their skin?
So yes, of course, people have started accepting that you need to have a healthier skin and even skin tone, irrespective of the color. And that is what is more important. But yes, I do feel that, and what I do tell most of my patients as well, that, you know, we get good clothes, we get good things, and we take good care of them. So there is no harm in taking good care of your skin. Like what my grandmother looked at the age of 60, my mom doesn't. And what my mom looked at the age of 30, I don't. So I think there is no harm in looking healthy and being healthy and looking your best. If that helps you, if that's what you want, then of course. But it's a choice.
I agree. Completely agree with you. So, Jaya, let's move to the next part of your specialization, which is hair transplant. And again, like skin, everyone is very conscious about their hair. Of course, bald is also considered to be the new look in for men.
It definitely
now.
Is.
But my question to you is that, what are the reasons a person loses hair?
So most of it is genetic.
Okay.
Of course, some environmental causes are also there, but most of it is genetic, especially with men, and even with women as well. What I personally think, and yes, it's not scientifically completely proven right now, but you know, as we are evolving as humans, over, if you see over last even 10,000, 15,000, so we kind of tend to lose what, you know, from our body, what we don't require, right? So I think hair, considering the urban lifestyle that we have, over years, basically hair used to be hair all over our body and on our hair. Was supposed to be a natural covering.
Correct.
But with, you know, us living mostly indoors and wearing all the clothes and stuff, I think it is just a natural way of evolving that we don't really need hair anymore. So I am pretty sure, I'm not saying in my lifetime, but in some lifetime, maybe 100, 200 years later, people would not be having hair and it would still be considered as good looking as it is.
And what about stress?
Yes, stress does result. Stress has effects on hair, on skin, on your entire general health. It starts, you know, when there's a stress buildup in the body, it would start with your stomach, it would go to your heart, it would go to your liver, it would start, then it would start manifesting in your skin, on your hair. And everybody's biology is different. So some people would even end up with, like, you know, rash on their body when they're very stressed. Some people end up losing more hair when they're stressed. So yes, of course, mental health is, in our scenario, it's one of the most challenging and one of the things which people should really accept and really take care of. It's as important as physical health.
Wonderful. So my next question to you is on hair transplant. what should one look for when I say one, in someone who believes they need a transplant? What should they look for when they are looking to get some hair transplant?
So one of the things which I rarely see, so hair transplant or any of the cosmetic procedures, they are not exactly, you know, something that I would prescribe. Like, you know, if you have some problem, I would say, you know, if it's like a fever, I would say you have to take this medicine, otherwise you would not be fine. But with all these cosmetic procedures, it's a choice.
Correct.
It's a choice which a patient is making themselves. I try to assess. I never try to push. The first time a patient would come, I would never say, oh, you need it. I would say, well, these are the options. But it's a natural process and you look beautiful anyways you are. I always give them time to think, to, you know, to come to a conclusion that they really want it. And it's not something that they're doing for somebody else. They're doing it for themselves. And also to check, you know, have a reality check. Because hair transplant, basically we are taking their own hair and we're just taking it from behind and just, you know, grafting it somewhere else. So it's not, we're not increasing the number of hair.
Correct.
We're just redistributing.
Correct.
So we have to have that reality check. Otherwise, patients do get dissatisfied. But yes, it's a completely cosmetic thing. I don't want to advertise about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to say understand. That you need it.
Understand.
So that is something I do tell.
Understand. And is it a permanent solution?
So, well, you know, it started happening, say, about 20 years ago. So we still don't have enough data to say whether it's going to last you your lifetime. But yes, we have seen for the last 10, 20 years, if done correctly, it can last you for about 20 years or so.
Okay.
So it's a very small strip on your head, which is like permanent hair. Rest of it does shed over time. So yes, some of it won't stay.
And you normally have hair around the crown, which seems to stay longer.
Yeah,
than...
so it's basically this part of hair, which is not affected by the hormones.
Okay.
And that is only the permanent one. So if we take from above or below that area, it might not get affected as soon. But yes, you might end up losing it after 10, 15 years. But yes, science is evolving very fast and we use extra things to make sure that they stay.
Amazing. You know, I've learned so much on hair transplant from you in the last few minutes. I've never ever learned so much. So let me move on to another part. And this is a little bit on gender balance. You know, I've spent 4 decades in the corporate world as an entrepreneur, and I've often said that there is a gender imbalance in the corporate world or in business world. I know that there are far more women in medicine, but what are your views on gender balance in medicine?
Yes, of course, like, you know, it's not, you know, I had school friends who went into engineering and they would still have more men in their classrooms. But in our college, yes, there were pretty much, we were equal, females and males. But one thing is that what I have seen over years, once we start practicing, practicing doctors are still males more than females, even when they finish their medicine.
And why is that? Is it because women have to go back to their homes because of
family.
Children, family, etc.?
Yes, maybe. Maybe because of that. I think it's changing. I think women are getting more involved. Families have started supporting their careers. But yes, at some point of time, they were expected to stay at home and take care more there, even if they were equally qualified or equally good.
Despite having spent, as you said in the beginning,
15,
16 years.
I still have friends who started with me and spent all those years and are now basically looking after the house first before stepping out for their career.
So again, you know, the medical world is a world that I know very little of. But when I ask some of my women guests, what do you think should be done to correct this faster? They said that companies should have a provision to be able to get young mothers with their children at work. What is your thought from the medical world?
Well, we can't take children to hospitals. We definitely can't do that. No, I think, you know, a more holistic, if we kind of, if you're talking about gender equality, then it has to be that you're sharing. If you have a family, then both the partners are sharing work at home and at work. And I think that would be enough. You know, if your spouse is empowering you and supporting your career and is, you know, taking equal responsibility at home, I think that is pretty much enough. And even if your parents, if they're retired and they support you and your family, I think even in the nuclear setup, I think having a good support system, it takes like a village to bring up children.
Correct.
So I think if you have that village, you're good.
Yeah, well, that's very well said. So I have a few more questions, and these are for you personally.
Sure.
Over the years, you know, and you've studied and you're a successful professional, have you had any people who've had an influence on your life? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
People who have had influence in my life. Well, directly, I would say my dad was the first person.
Was he also, is he also a doctor?
No, he's not. He actually came from a very conservative family.
Okay.
And none of the other females, none of my other cousins, elder cousins who were girls, ever really studied more than they needed to.
Okay.
So when I decided to become a doctor, he went all in. He gave me all the opportunity that I needed. I had to go to, you know, 2,000 kilometers across, and he was very supportive, whereas nobody in my family had ever left Delhi, and especially a girl. So, and he himself, basically, his dad came from a village, and he grew up without a room. He used to live on a terrace with dad, but he made a life for himself. He worked very hard, and he earned enough for, you know, to give us all this education. So, and just not for us, he basically did that for a lot of people around
him.
So he taught me compassion, which I think extends to my patients now. He taught me how to be good to people who are not even related to you, just to be good because you have to be good. And equally my mother, because she supported him. She supported him blindly. Amazing. She never thought that what he's earning is just for us. So they both were like, you know, they both were the pillars of the family.
Fantastic.
And I think that really makes a big impact.
I agree.
But then, yes, now I meet a lot of people on a day-to-day basis. And you know, I pick whatever I can learn from them.
Fantastic. So my next question to you is that what would be three words that define Jaya?
I think I'm a strong person. I used to say I'm a survivor, but lately I've started realizing I'm more like a warrior. And I'm a very empathetic person.
Wonderful. That's very nice. Very nice. So tell me, you know, in the world of medicine, where you have such a hectic life, how do you manage your work-life balance?
So luckily enough, dermatology is not that hectic. It doesn't have as many, you know, it's not as challenging as surgery or general medicine or obstetric gynecology. All these fields would be because they have more emergency. So dermatology is more, you know, it's not that hectic, and it's better for me. So basically, it's not that difficult.
We don't teach our children that it's okay to fail.
Yes.
And yet we fail a lot in life.
A lot.
So my question to you, Jaya, is what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes or your failures?
So one of my biggest failure has been that sometimes I let my emotions overpower, you know, my daily work life. And what that has taught me is when I was like 14, 15, and the first time I took like a counseling session. And, you know, they just had a question that, does your studies impact if you're not feeling like studying? And I was like, wow, no, if I have to study, I have to study. But as I grew older, you become more mature. So my biggest failure has been that, you know, the emotional quotient, which we don't teach our children, that has been the highest learning curve for me, because you need to be a very emotionally balanced person to be able to lead a balanced life, even professionally or personally. So I think when you are bringing up children, when you are, you know, teaching the young minds, I think you should be focusing as much on mental health as you are on their careers, on their hygiene, on their food. You should be focusing as much on the mental health and seeing that they are being brought up as strong and good human beings.
Wonderful. And my last question to you is, do you have any regrets?
So, as I said, somehow, you know, like when I took up dermatology, I was just not sure. somehow in my life, I know nobody should say that they don't have regrets. It's kind of sounds cliche, but somehow the way I have been brought up, whatever happens, I end up always feeling, oh, this is for the best. This just happened for the best. Even when initially when I feel, oh my God, what is this happening and why is this happening with me? Somehow it just turns up for the best. Like with dermatology, I just did not want to become a dermatologist. And today I feel like I do paint and all. So the creative side helps me with the cosmetic side. And I never foresaw that.
Wow.
So I think, no, not really.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. So Jaya, thank you very much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. And I wish you lots of success and all the great work you are doing and you want to do in the villages.
Thank you so much for having me here. It was a pleasure being here. And yes, the village work, that is one of the main reasons why I'm here. Mm-hmm. I hope to, you know, reach this message to as many people, because as I said, I would be needing a lot of support when I start doing
wonderful.
That work.
Wonderful. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.